We're live. Hi.
Hello, I'm Chris.
And I'm Alice.
And you're listening to... Wait, what was it called again?
I don't know. Someone Made Me Gay.
Xena! You're listening to Xena Made Me Gay.
Yay!
In the times of brick phones, Tamagotchis and curtain bangs, the 90s kids cried out for a badass. She was Xena, the warrior princess. The kicks, the moves, the nostalgia, the queerness. Xena made us gay.
I don't think that we should get into this long-ass apology of not putting out any content for a long time, because that's lame, but we're back.
We're back, and we wanted to thank those of you who wrote to us while we were in this little hiatus. It, as you can see, it didn't make us resume much quicker. But it was still really, really nice to hear, so thank you.
Yeah, it was heartwarming, and I hope that some of you stuck around.
And before we get to the episode, what do you want to talk about?
Actually, I wanted to start talking about the episode first, because I think this was one of those that I had no recollection of, like, in this particular rewatch, I might have watched it for the first time, because I
really,
I for some reason, maybe I skipped it all the previous times that I watched Xena, and impressed with the character that appears in this episode. He is
impressed.
I mean, there are a lot of useless straight dudes that we encounter.
Yes, I was gonna say, do you mean in the series? But then I was like, no, that is unnecessary.
Just
to specify.
But sometimes you look at a straight dude and you're like, oh my god, like, are you intentionally trying to prove all the tropes about you? I felt like that about the character that we introduced in this episode. Spoiler alert, it's Xena's older brother.
Yes.
Yeah, so that got me thinking, because, like, he's a real piece of work. And that got me thinking about just generally when we're shown families in TV shows and films and books and stuff. There's interesting trope of, like, this is the fuck up in the family. And it's interesting how different films are treating that, because, like, I was sitting down and I was thinking, like, who do I remember as being like this, also like this very interesting example of a fuck up in the family, and the first person that I thought of was Cousin Greg from Succession. Some spoilers for Succession and other shows and films. If you don't want spoilers, skip ahead 7 minutes.
7 minutes, damn.
Give or take. Ending the conversation about Cousin Greg.
Yeah. He definitely stands out.
Yeah, and it's not easy to do, because it's not like everyone else is so lovely and successful and...
Yeah, but they have, like, a very recognizable pattern of their, like, family-style fuck-up. And he doesn't fit that particular fuck-up style, which is why he is the black sheep.
Yeah. But it's interesting that in the end he kind of comes out on top. Like, everyone else is more or less screwed. And he's fine, I think.
I'm trying to remember, like, every person's like final, like, place that they end up. I don't know about everyone. I think there's a range of places that people end up. But for sure, Cousin Greg seems to be doing all right by the end.
He turns out to be better than a lot of people in the family because, like, his love story has, like, a good ending.
I completely forgot what happens there.
His significant other comes to the most successful place at the end. So in proximity, he's okay.
Oh, ha.
I mean, it's like that, right?
Well, yes, sure.
We know he's gonna take care of him.
Aww. That's true. He might castrate him, but other than that, he'll treat him well. So because you mentioned Succession, my thoughts immediately went to, like, other series specifically. Mm-hmm. And I thought of Tyrion in Game of Thrones. Well, I guess, like, in the books, it's the same. Mm-hmm. And there it's kind of the case of, like, the character is supposed to be the fuck up from the point of view of the rest of the family, but actually he's, like, the coolest one or whatever.
Yeah.
And I also thought of Ryan Phillippe's character in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Haven't watched, so tell me about it a little bit.
So in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, there's this character, Charles Boyle, and he is this kind of super dorky little guy. And he comes from a whole family where, like, the defining family trait is that they're dorky little guys.
Aww. And
kind of, you know, not conventionally attractive and kind of, you know, a bit silly and quirky, but, like, not manic pixie dream girl quirky. Like, oh, mm-hmm. who's that? Quirky. Mm-hmm. And so they have a black sheep in the family, played by Ryan Phillippe, who's this, like, conventionally attractive, successful, like, entrepreneur.
Yeah. Like,
such a weirdo. And, like, that's the joke, obviously.
Because you were saying dorky, and I'm like, Ryan Phillippe, dorky. Like,
yeah. But that's the joke.
Cool. And also, like, it's interesting that you mentioned, like, sometimes the fuck up in the family is the one that the audience is actually rooting for. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like we, the audience, understand, oh, yeah, they're definitely the fuck up, and we're kind of, like, rooting for everybody else in the family. Mm-hmm. So I think that, like, the fuck up in the family that we actually do sympathize with is Steve Carell's character from A Little Miss Sunshine. Have you watched it?
I watched it, but, like, right when it came out, so I was mm-hmm. really young. I don't remember it that well, and I think some of the interesting parts of the film went over my head a bit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I watched it once also a long time ago, but, like, I remember it quite well, and I love this movie, and, yeah, like, he is the, like, gay uncle. Just, like, I think that, like, there's also, like, this trope of, oh, this is a gay uncle, so he's a gay uncle in the family, but, like, the dad is, like, a real piece of shit for most of the movie, and he's giving a hard time to his whole family, and, like, Steve Carell kind of, like, is positioned, like, oh, he's depressed, he's gay, like, he's like,
hello,
yeah. Like, he's like, you know, look at this poor guy, right? Like, so, mm-hmm. but then we understand that he's, like, of course, like, the best adult that you could talk to, and, like, he aww. Really turns out to be, like, the MVP of the episode, not the MVP, of the movie in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, yeah, like, the gay uncle is really a trope in itself. Like, I'm remembering Scar from Lion King.
Oh yeah. For sure.
And, like, there was a gay son in this weird comedy, The Wedding Crashers, that didn't age well. I remember liking it when it came out, like years and years and
years
ago. Yeah, but yeah, it's like so openly homophobic in how they portray gay son who is like, oh, I'll sleep with any male guest that comes in. Like, it's very so yeah, so I think that like it's interesting coming back to Xena, that basically I think that the way her mom treats her at the very beginning, it's like, oh, you're the fuck up in the family, you're the reason that like everybody hates me because like you became this horrible warlord, also you're gay, and I'm not sure that like the homophobic aspect is there, but like, you know, but when we see her cis hetero brother, we're like, oh my fucking god.
Yeah.
So if you also forgot this episode or haven't seen this episode and you're wondering what's so special about this dude, let us get to the episode and show you.
So yeah, the episode is called Death Mask. Which sounds a lot more kind of ominous and eerie than the episode actually turns out to be. Like that, it's, I would say it's on the lighter side.
Yeah,
actually. But yeah, the title is very serious, scary.
I would say that like it's intentionally goofy in some aspects and unintentionally goofy in others.
Well, as it often is with Xena, no?
Yeah. Yeah. So we open on Gabrielle asking Xena about her time in the baddie convention, mainly about the arrow catching workshop that we mentioned a lot. And Gabrielle can't figure out how Xena does it. Neither can we.
I mean, so weirdly enough, Gabrielle says that nobody else can do it because we saw a baddie literally do it in the very first episode of the series. Like that's how he was introduced. So it is maybe not a common skill, but it's not a unique skill to Xena. But for some reason, I guess Gabrielle didn't see it.
Or maybe Gabrielle is just so fascinated with Xena. She's like, nobody else can do what you do. You're so awesome.
Oh, fair enough.
So Xena, of course, gives this 90s inspirational porn answer and just says, stop trying and then it will happen. Thanks. Very, very legit. But it turns out to be actually a very good pep talk because a few seconds after this conversation, a masked dude shoots an arrow at Xena and Gabrielle from the bushes, and Gabrielle stops the arrow with her staff. So it worked, apparently.
Yeah.
And then our gals successfully fight off the two baddies in masks. So here's the death masks coming in.
Yeah, so when Xena defeats the guy that she's fighting, she sees the attacker's face. And there's clearly some recognition there. And at first I thought that she knew the guy specifically. But yeah, as we later find out, it's the mask that she recognizes. I gotta say, it's not like a super distinct mask. Like it's very basic in terms of its shape. It's just made out of metal, it looks like. And that's kind of it. Like there is no special like bedazzlement on it. Like, oh, only this gang bedazzles their mask in this way.
That Salmonius is gay. Bedazzles.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah, maybe he's gonna run into them at some point and be like, I have a merch idea for you.
Yep. So Gabrielle is actually on fire in this particular fight. She successfully defeats what seems to be a pretty good fighter. Like, it's not Joxer.
Right. Yeah.
The level of difficulty is up there, but she defeats him. And we see Xena reacting to Gabby smashing him with her staff. And it's like a combination of like, ah, yeah, that's my girl. And like, wow, this guy really got it hard. Like, it was like this like little micro movement of Lucy Lawless's face, but like it was really nicely done.
It's cute.
Mm-hmm. And Xena turns to her signature interrogation technique on one of the baddies, so like the five-finger death punch. And the baddie says that someone named Cortez sent two assassins, and we can see that Xena definitely knows that name. So Xena also finds out that Cortez is attacking the nearby village as we speak. We can see the smoke coming out of the woods nearby. And it seems that at this point it might be too late for the village. But of course, Xena and Gabrielle want to go and check it out anyway. So when Xena knocks out the baddie, first restoring the blood flow to his brain and then knocking him out, she says that the man who attacked her village, so Amphipolis, wore the mask of Cortez.
Yeah, so I'm getting a little bit confused because there's this mask of Cortez, and then there's Cortez himself, and it becomes unclear whether Xena's village got attacked by Cortez himself, or some random other dude with Cortez's mask, or someone who Cortez like specifically told to attack that village. I feel like that could have been phrased in a more specific way.
Yeah, it's unclear. That's true. But anyway, Gabrielle is like, oh, so he's the one that made you into a main character.
Yeah. And Xena is like, yeah, and I never stopped looking for him. Which, that just kind of doesn't seem true.
No.
This is the first time we're hearing about him. It seems like she's just been kind of chilling in that regard.
Yeah.
In the last few years. But also, that's something that comes up later again with her brother.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the guy's a warlord. How hard can he be to find?
Yeah, no, I mean,
like, he's not a fugitive, you know? He goes around and fucks things up.
In a big way.
Yeah, just like, follow that. And I'm pretty sure you're gonna find him.
Yeah, I guess in this case, I never stopped looking for him means if I encounter him by chance, I'm gonna fuck him up. But like, otherwise,
yeah.
No. So after the opening credits, we see that Xena and Gabrielle go rescue the burning village. And the first thing we see is a kid who has no regards for life because she lost a doll in the middle of a huge battle. Like, things are burning. People are riding horses. What? People are killing each other. Like, mainly the baddies are killing the villagers. And she just decides to go frolic her way to the center of the action, smiling ear to ear.
And yeah, the smile is a wild choice.
Right? It's like, I mean, it's a very special kid, let's say that.
Yeah.
So Gabrielle ends up saving her, but judging by this kid's attitude, she's not gonna live for long. Like, let's see, but yeah.
It's interesting that this is the second kind of deadpan looking kid in the middle of a village raid that we see in two episodes, like right in the beginning of Callisto, we see a village raid, and there's a little boy who's like completely blank out of it and ignoring all the death and murder that is happening around him, and now this one. So yeah, the showrunners seem to be really into them for a moment.
Lazy.
Aww.
sorry, no. I love you guys. Anyway, Xena and Gabrielle start randomly attacking multiple baddies in the village. And it's like, it's impressive because there are two of them, but they're so successful that the baddies at some point, their leader yells retreat, and the baddies retreat, I guess, because Xena and Gabrielle were so threatening. So as the baddies go back to the woods, like this oily looking guy takes off his mask and stares in Xena. And this is going to be important.
Why oily? Like, what's oily about him?
It's like, you know, like, you know, like when you, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. You see him in a bar looking at you and you're like, oh my God, I hope he doesn't come talk to me. Like, that's the look.
Yeah, but oily?
Yeah.
Like, what?
Slippery bastard.
That's so random. Because, like, when you say oily, my first thought is like, oh, his hair looks oily. Like, he hasn't like shampooed his hair for a bit. but like, this guy's hair, it is quite distinctive. Like, it's
like this mullet, right?
Yeah, I know that mullets are back. This is a very kind of recognizably 90s type of mullet. And also, it's kind of similar to Xena's haircut, so it's a very goofy look, but it's not oily. Like, it looks freshly shampooed.
I was not
and
talking
like
about
blown
the
out.
Hair. I was talking about the guy overall.
But like, the second thing that I think of is you know, like, well moisturized, oily skin, like glowing, which again, not his case. If anything, I would say Corti is kind of more like oiled up and shiny.
That's true.
Not this one. I'm just, I would like to register my protest here in terms of your use of the word oily, and please do something about this.
As most complaints, this complaint is registered and I'm not gonna do anything about it.
Yeah, fair enough.
So coming back to the episode, a Roman-looking dude and a couple of his soldiers come out from around the corner and say, yeah, I'd love to follow the baddies into the woods, but there's a border there and I cannot cross it. And we're, as the audience, are like, okay, dude, like, we get it. A border in the woods. Mm-hmm. So the baddie who recognized Xena runs to his commander, like this oily guy. Sorry to come back to that.
Wait, the commander is oily or the guy is oily?
We saw a guy in a mask looking distinctly at Xena as if he recognized Xena.
Yes.
And this guy goes to his commander, which is another guy.
Yeah.
And volunteers to go tell Cortez about Xena. But the commander is like, nah, I'll do it myself.
You make him sound so polite here. What he actually says is like, dude, who the fuck do you think you are? You haven't earned the privilege to speak to Cortez.
That's true.
You make him sound like, oh, don't worry. Like, I'll do it.
I'll go talk to the boss.
Yeah. You just sit here, have a cup of tea.
I mean, if they were in the office, that would happen this way. But like, anyway, the point is that like the commander wants to take the credit for the great annual report. So the know-it-all baddie discloses that Xena is named Xena and she's a warrior from Amphipolis. And I'm very surprised that he doesn't call her by her real surname, which is Xena Warrior Princess, but we'll get to that. Next, we see Cortez himself lying on a fainting couch next to a pile of some very plasticky-looking jewels. And he looks smug. He sort of looks like a bootleg version of Autolycus. I think maybe it's the open vest and the well-oiled chest.
Yeah. I gotta say, I just love how nobody ever ages in this series. Like, this dude looks like he's in his 30s, maybe?
Yep.
How old was he when he attacked Medina's village? 10?
Yeah. Like, the concept of time in Xena Warrior Princess, it's very vague.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, when I was a child, this man attacked my village. Oh, here he is looking exactly like that. I'm now an adult. I've led a life that involved like 700 world events over the span of 1,000 years. You know, doesn't that happen to you?
Yeah, 20 years ago I was the same age.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
or maybe, I don't know, you know how everyone's talking about how there's a new plastic surgeon in Hollywood and he's managing to make all these like 45-year-old celebrities, you know, 25 again. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's where he comes from. Maybe he was hanging out in the Xena universe for a bit, and then he was like, you know, next stop, 2024.
I mean, Cortez could afford it with all the plasticky-looking jewels he has.
Aww.
So, the commander kneels before Cortez and says they did not have the time to collect the loot before the king's soldiers arrive because of a woman. And as soon as the commander mentions that the woman had enormous strength, Cortez instantly knows who she is and actually calls her by her full name. She's like, Xena? Warrior Princess Xena?
Yeah, yeah. But that kind of only emphasizes just how useless the information that the supposedly oily dude was going to provide. Like, everyone knows.
Yep, yep.
It's like, oh, you recognize Xena? So do we.
That's fair. So the commander is like, you already know of her? And Cortez says, I created her. And it's a nice callback to the previous episode with Callisto.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, watch out. People, creating people. Anyway, Gabrielle and Xena are going through the woods. I feel like it's like 60% of the show. They're going through the woods and talking.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And Gabrielle is bragging about the fact that she caught an arrow. And Xena is like, yeah, I'm sure. Impressive. Whatever. And then a masked dude just stands there in the woods, in their way. Xena comes up to the guy bearing her sword, and the guy is like, oh, do you want to kill your own brother? Spoiler alert. There'll be a lot of instances during this episode that I really wanted to kill Xena's brother.
Aww.
And Gabrielle is confused. She thought that Xena's brother was killed by Cortez when Cortez attacked Amphipolis. And Xena's like, no, this is my older brother. And he's like, yeah, I joined Cortez's army because it's the closest way to get to Cortez and kill him.
And he's been doing that for the last 20 years?
Yep.
Like, damn, he's been doing a shit job.
I mean, at this point, we don't know it yet, but after seeing the whole episode with this character, that does not surprise me one bit. So next we see the three of them by the bonfire, and Gabrielle is cooking what seems to be frogs or squirrels, like very weird looking meat on a stick.
What? It looks like chicken.
It doesn't look like chicken. Chicken does not
exactly
look like that.
It looks like chicken. It's just undercooked chicken. Oh, come on. There's even a shout out to KFC. Because Gabrielle kind of laments that she doesn't have her little sister's signature secret 17 herbs and spices.
Yeah. And talking about her little sister, she starts yapping about the fact that she and her sister often quarrel, but family comes first, and so on and so on.
Yeah, she clearly just like keeps talking because she can sense the tension in the air, and she's like, I'm just gonna make it okay by just talking. I'm gonna talk and things are gonna be okay just because I talk so much.
Yeah, she wants to fill in the silence. That's fair. But Xena and her brother, his name is Taurus, but I'm gonna call him Sulky Bro. That's his name. Xena and her brother don't seem to want to talk and only exchange snappy remarks. So Xena says she can help him bring Cortez to justice, and Sulky Bro says that Cortez will find justice at the end of his sword. Sure, dude. And when Gabrielle hands him the cooked frog, which appears to be chicken...
talk about, oh, do you want breast? Do you want a wing? Do you want drumsticks?
Okay. So when Gabrielle hands him...
Do you know what size frogs are? They're not like in the Dominican Republic. Like, they don't have 3-kilo frogs jumping around.
Anyway, so when Gabriel hands him the cooked chicken, he grabs it with this passive aggressiveness of a regular Karen. And yeah, I don't know. Like, it's either a brilliant choice by the screenwriters, the director, and the actor, or a horrible one. Because, like, if they wanted to make the dude sympathetic in any sort of shape or form, they failed miserably. But if they wanted to just paint the picture of the worst dude you could possibly meet, then chef's kiss. Because, like, everything he does is infuriating to me.
Interesting. I mean, I obviously wasn't a fan, but I don't think he annoyed me nearly as much as he annoyed you.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I was fuming the whole time. I was.
I can tell.
So Xena asked Gabriel to pretend feed Argo so she and Selkiebro can talk. And Gabriel's like, oh, Argo doesn't need feed. Oh, I gotta go feed Argo. Gotta go do that. So Xena tries to convince Selkiebro that murder is not the answer. And Selkiebro throws blame around by saying that it's basically Xena's fault that their younger brother died during Curtiz's attack on their village.
Lovely. Yep.
Nice. So when Gabrielle comes back after fake feeding Argo, Xena asks her to go hide in the village with the mom of a child with the death wish that she rescued. But Gabrielle stands her ground, and good for her, and she says, I get it. It's your way of saying that it's not safe to be around you, Xena, but there's actually isn't a safe time to be around you, so you might need my help, and I'm staying. So I was very proud.
Yeah, it's nice. I think it, like, both speaks to Gabrielle's growing self-confidence, but also, you know, because she and Xena have been essentially living together for a while, she now knows all the code words. And she's like, okay, I understand what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I will not have that.
Yeah. It's like when you know that your partner has a tendency to break up with you whenever, like, things go hard.
Oh, that doesn't sound nice.
No, it doesn't. But, like, I mean, it's not that I had that experience, but I think it's also a trope in some romantic movies. And, like, first you're like, oh, yeah, of course, like, maybe you just don't love me. And now you know it and you're like, okay, I see what you're doing. Not gonna work. So she ends her speech with addressing Selkiebro, like, sorry you had to witness our family fight with Xena. And Xena looks amused and proud in the background.
Yeah, it's very sweet.
So Xena tries to make a plan with Selkiebro and says that she'll look around with, she wants to go to the camp where Curtiz's army is stationed and just look around his commander's tent. And Selkiebro is like, no, you don't know what these monsters do to women. I'm like, thanks for your concern, but it seems that the whole world knows Xena as the baddest woman warrior alive, and Selkiebro just decides to ignore all that. That's, like, super interesting that, like, everybody knows Xena Warrior Princess beside her immediate family, and that's kind of, I don't know, that's kind of truthful that, like, he's the only one who doesn't want to recognize her accomplishments, basically.
Interesting. Yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm. What I think struck me as the weird part here was that he said, oh, you don't know what these monsters do to women. Like, obviously Xena knows what those kinds of people do to women. How can she possibly not know?
So anyway, it seems that Xena managed to convince Selkiebro to follow her plan. So he ties her up very loosely, I might add, and takes her to his commander's camp. And he's like, now you have to take me to Curtiz. Look what I brought him. and his commander is like understandably not impressed with his stomping and whining. He's like, bitch, I don't have to do anything. I'll just have fun with this one while you stand and cry in the corner.
Fair enough, honestly.
Yeah. It's like, it's also like a trope of like this nerdy, weird kid, like trying to make himself cool in front of like high school jocks. And So the commander takes Xena to his tent, and while the commander continues to bitch slap the sulky bro, Xena does an amazing thing. That's one of my favorite scenes in this episode.
Absolutely.
So she flexes her chest muscles so that the boob dagger flies out in the air from her bra, lands in her hands, and yeah, this is an amazing party trick. She frees herself, and she actually manages to collect a few things from the commander's table.
Yeah, it's the return of the boob dagger that we've been waiting for. And I'm just so glad to see it again, our old buddy. Yeah, so the thing that she collects are on a table next to some pigeons in cages. Mm-hmm. And so she sees their messages and she grabs one, stuffs it in her bra next to the lovely dagger.
Yeah, yeah. But like, yeah, flexing her boob muscles so that the dagger flies out. This is genius. I love it.
It's so good. It's so good.
So meanwhile, the commander comes in and starts to dirty talk and scary talk about what he's going to do to Xena, essentially rape her. But it's very satisfying to watch because the look of Xena's face is like, yeah, dude, tough luck. And the commander says, so let's get right to it. And Xena says, have it your way, and knocks him out. And like, again, it happens constantly in Xena Warrior Princess, but like every time it's very satisfying for me to watch when like this like scary dude is like, ooh, baby, I'm gonna fuck you up. And Xena's like, nope, the other way around. So while Xena is in the commander's camp, we see Gabrielle doing the last samurai routine by the lake with sulky bro there who continues to sulk. And he's like, I don't like this. Xena's outnumbered and alone. And Gabrielle's like, how many baddies are in the camp? 20? Yeah, it's nothing to her. It's gonna be fine.
Aww.
Yeah, it's a really nice moment. So then Gabrielle proceeds to tell sulky bro Xena taught her to listen to her body. Like, and I think that is still about arrow catching thing that she tries to repeat.
Right.
And Gabrielle mentions that she was just a girl from a small village when she met Xena, and sulky bro immediately turns that into another Xena diss. He's like, aha, she's doing the same to you what she did to our village. People in my village were these simple, silly folks just like you, and then she turned them into fighters. How dare she?
Yeah, and Gabrielle is like, okay, if you hate her so much, why are you worried? And sulky bro's like, who, me? No, I'm never worried. And then he continues to stand there looking worried.
Yeah.
I thought that was a pretty nice touch.
It was. So luckily Xena comes back before sulky bro has a chance to mansplain something else to Gabrielle.
Yeah, so Xena comes back and she asks sulky bro whether he knows about the baddie commander's messenger pigeons. And he's like, yeah, sure, I know about the pigeons. And then she's like, and also the fact that they carry the royal crest. And he's like, whoops, nope, that part I didn't know. So they decide that they need to get into the king's palace to find out who Cortez's inside man is. Sulky bro thinks it's going to be basically impossible to get inside the castle since it's so well guarded. But Xena assures him she has her ways of getting in. Mm-hmm. And Gabrielle gets this really cute smile on her face when Xena says that.
Aww.
And then Gabrielle understandingly adds that it's much easier to get two in than three. That's what she said.
That's what she said.
That is literally what she said. I don't know what to tell you.
Love it.
And it's the fact that like there's a smile that appears on her face when the conversation is happening. I don't know. I feel like it's in the text.
It
Let's
is.
Let's say that.
Yeah, I think that in this episode in particular, both actresses just had fun with those little micro expressions that kind of change the meaning of what they're saying.
Then they somehow end up in the king's palace and they meet the Roman-looking guy who we saw earlier, who got to the village raid too late and then refused to pursue the baddies because of the border. Mm-hmm. And they convince him to take them to the king by telling him that there's a spy inside the castle. And so he leads them to some large throne room. Mm-hmm. And he asks them to surrender their weapons, which they do. But then he just takes the weapons and puts them on a table nearby and leaves. Like, he knows, right, that they can just walk up to their weapons and grab them again, right?
Yeah.
Like it's easily achieved.
Yeah.
But whatever, yep. Then the king shows up on the balcony and...
Surprise, surprise, it turns out to be Cortez. So the king is Cortez and the Cortez is king. Awesome.
Yeah. And he's dressed in your most kind of cartoonishly stereotypical medieval king.
Yeah.
Slutty Halloween outfit.
Yep.
I say slutty because his chest is bare and well oiled. I think this is just something that most guys in this universe are into. Like, we see so many bare chests.
Yep.
It's quite impressive. It's quite impressive.
I mean, it's hot.
Yeah. I don't know. What if it's like a rainy day? What do they do? Their poor little nipples must get so hard.
Ooh. So then Cortez asks Xena and Sulky Bro if they have anything to say for themselves. And of course, Sulky Bro yells, "You're dead!" and gets into one of Cortez's traps immediately. So I guess Cortez and Sisyphus went to the same booby trap seminars at the baddie conventions, because it's quite elaborate, like what they get into.
Yeah, so let me describe it. The trap involves Cortez pulling like a horn lever on his chair. Like, his chair is full of horns and they're all levers to activate traps. So he pulls one of them, which in turn makes a golden horse head on the wall kind of turn up, breathe fire, and then shoot two darts. It's so fancy.
Yep.
I'm very impressed. And so because there are darts shooting at Sulky Bro, Xena has to like jump and rescue him. And he manages to get mad even at that. Like, he kind of shrugs her off after that.
I'm fine. He's just like, yeah, a well-rounded character.
Yeah.
So Cortez then reveals that his evil plan consists of blaming his crimes on Xena and calls the guards and escapes. And Xena and Sulky Bro try to leave the palace, but are stopped by a bunch of guards. And Sulky Bro wants to fight, but Xena doesn't want to hurt the guards because they're the good guys. So the guards slowly come closer while growling like someone's rumbling stomach. No joke. And Xena defeats them with two dirty rugs used as a weapon. No joke.
Yeah, and then they just jump out of the window, Xena and Sulky Bro. I hope it was the first floor.
And Cortez runs up to the window, looks out, and then throws this hissy fit that fully looks queer-coded to me.
Yep, definitely.
Which feels like a weird choice here. Like, I did not expect that. Like, there was nothing about Cortez up until then that struck me as queer-coded necessarily. And now he's this, like,
I mean, I think with all the credit that we give to our favorite show, I think that might be the 90s stereotypical perception of like whiny wee guys are queer coded. Because I think that we have that with Salmonius a little bit, but Salmonius is very likable. And I think that this is like the other side of the coin. Sort of feels like that.
But he's not weak, he's a fucking warlord.
Yeah, but like he's weak in comparison to Xena.
Everyone's weak in comparison to Xena.
That's true. But like, you know what I mean, like they're trying to show that, like, I think what they're trying to show here is like the king is naked sort of thing. Like, he's not that scary. He does throw hissy fits.
Yeah, I don't know. I just especially given a certain thing that is coming later in the episode.
Oh, yes!
Oh, my God. I just feel like it's a strange choice.
Or logical one.
No!
Okay. Let us get to the thing.
Yeah.
So Xena and Zelkibro come back to the village where Gabrielle is practicing her arrow-catching moves, and the child with a deaf wish is helping her by shooting those, like, toy arrows at her. And Xena asks the child's mother to gather the village elders so that she can talk to them. So Xena reveals that Cortez and the king are one of the same, and Gabrielle asks, "What are we gonna do?" And Zelkibro immediately starts whining. He's like, "Wow, we could have killed him, but we didn't." I just wanted him to shut up. But when Gabrielle rightfully points out that you can't just go around murdering people, Zelkibro shouts out, "As if you know the difference between murder and justice," and runs off in the tantrum. In the woods, Zelkibro starts another tantrum by first attacking Gabrielle. "How do you put up with this girl?" And then he makes Xena basically sit through his therapy breakthrough, I guess, because he starts talking about the fact that back then in Amphipolis, when their village was attacked, Xena wanted to gather the people to fight and fight back, and he left. Because he thought that that was kind of like the correct thing to do, or so he thought, but now he realized that he left because he was afraid, and Xena was right, and I was wrong, and I was afraid to die, that's why I did it, and oh my god, I'm a useless piece of shit, but it's all your fault, Xena, it's all your fault.
It's a whole moment for him. Like, he goes through so many therapy breakthroughs. So
yeah.
At first with Gabrielle, he's like, "Oh, she's so annoying. How can you put up with her?" But then immediately after, he's like, but I thought that I understood what you were doing with her. But actually, she's just brave on her own. And wow. And also, ugh. Like, there's so many strong emotions, and like it feels like every thought that comes to his head is just like so overwhelming,
yeah,
because he has so few of them just on a daily basis. Like, every thought is like an intense experience, and he has these like visceral reactions to them.
Yeah, and he has a lot of anger, and of course, like, it could be placed only on Xena, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So at the end of that speech, Zelkibro comes up with yet another suicidal plan, and Xena is like, "Bro, come on, try not to die for like 5 seconds."
Yeah, then the mother of the death wish child comes and tells Xena that the elders have gathered and that she should come. And we see that while Xena is on her way, Gabrielle is kind of warming up the crowd. Mm-hmm. And she asks them, when your village was being raided, who stopped the baddies? And the elder is like, the two of you did. And Gabriel's like, yes, I guess. I mean, it was mostly Xena.
Aww.
And I like this moment because we get to see this transformation of Gabrielle into this warrior of her own,
mm-hmm.
both in terms of her skills. Like the entire episode, we see her practicing a new skill for her, for herself, like with this catching arrows thing. Mm-hmm. So she is actually actively working on it and building up her skill set, but also how she's perceived by others. And therefore how she thinks of herself.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, she's so used to being like, oh yes, Xena is the warrior and I'm just kind of there.
Mm-hmm.
But here she's slowly being confronted with the fact that that's no longer how she comes across based on how she acts.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool. I really like that little detail.
Me too. And it's an interesting kind of trajectory for the character, definitely. So Xena comes and tries talking to the villagers and convince them that Curtiz and the king are the same person, but she's not very convincing. Meanwhile, her useless brother slips out and tries to fulfill his stupid plan.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the first thing that Sulky Bro does is gets himself captured, beating up, and tied to a tree, and Xena comes to rescue him, but also gets captured, and Curtiz's commander takes them both to the king's dungeon.
Yeah, and so we see them in the dungeon, and they have their hands tied to some metal bar above their heads, but otherwise they're just kind of standing there, and like nothing else is tied up.
And Xena tries to make up the plan of escape, but Sulky Bro is sulking and not speaking to her because he was insulted. How dare she try and save his life? That's an insult to his manhood.
Yeah, he pretty much goes like, why did you have to come and ruin everything? This was supposed to be my moment. So girl, pathetic. Your moment was being beaten up and tied to a tree.
Literally. So anyway, they chat some more, and Xena actually explains the writer's stance on what is bad and what is good in the entire show, I think. So she's like, killing in the heat of battle or for self-defense is kind of okay, but a premeditated murder is a big no-no. And I think that, like, it's a very ambiguous moral point, but for both Xena and the writers, it's like, absolutely set in stone, like when it's okay to kill people and when it's not. And it's interesting that it's kind of explained here.
Yeah, I mean, Xena does actually say, like, well, yeah, I guess the distinction is just in my head,
mm-hmm.
but this is what I believe.
Yeah. But like, it's interesting that, like, maybe it's cool that they address it here, because before it was kind of like, oh, this is the moral code that we're all living by.
Mm-mm-mm.
So after they talk, the Roman looking guy, who is apparently like the king's first general or something, comes to them and is like, I won't torture you to death if you tell me where Curtiz is. And Xena is like, dude, look in the throne room.
Yeah. And then they start fighting, and it starts with Sulky Bro grabbing the general's neck with his feet. And then Xena uses her feet to knock the sword out of the general's hands. She catches the sword with her feet,
mm-hmm.
and then basically goes up into a pike to cut the rope around her hands. Like, this is such impressive core strength
yeah.
for both of our heroes.
Yeah, definitely. So Xena points the sword at the general and is like, show me where the post pigeons are.
Yeah, not, I think, what he was expecting. Like, I think he was expecting that they would, like, try to run away, and they're like, no, that's why would you think that? So Xena sends out a pigeon, and then she asks the general about where the king is. And mm-hmm. he gives an answer, and Xena sends Sulky Bro off to take care of Curtiz at that location, which seems
like a weird choice at first, but once Sulky Bro leaves, she grabs the general and is like, okay, so clearly you were trying to protect the king and told me a lie. Where is he actually?
That is very clever, actually.
That is super clever, yeah. And we see that Sulky Bro is just sent to some random spot where a couple of soldiers are practicing archery. Mm-hmm. And he defeats them pretty easily and then realizes that Cortez isn't there. And in the best traditions of disappointed, he yells, that dude lied and Zeta knew it!
That's so good.
Like, it's textbook Kevin Sorbo acting.
Yep, definitely.
You know, like, just say exactly what is happening. Like, yell out your emotion.
Love it.
It's so good.
That's great. So in the end, it turns out that Xena summoned Cortez's baddie army to attack his own castle, and that's why she needed the post pigeons. So a big fight ensues, and in the middle of the fight scene, it seems that Xena hangs Cortez from a wall hook by hanging him on his asshole. That's the only way I could explain this scene. It's like, she takes Cortez, there's a hook, she hangs him there, and I guess that, like, what they meant is, like, she hangs him by, like, I don't know, his waist belt or something.
Yeah.
But it really looks like he's hanging because the hook is in his asshole.
Yeah, like, what the fuck? I was not ready for that.
No.
And that's why I'm saying, like, that makes the choice of the actor to, like, do this, I don't know whether it was the actor, whether he was told to do that, but, like, to have this, like, weird queer-coded hissy fit, so much worse.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Yeah. But, like, it seems like the most violent thing to happen to a character in Xena Warrior Princess.
I know. At some point during the fight, Xena and Sulky Bro are fighting next to each other. And then they decide to do this thing where they take each other's arms, and then Xena just somersaults over him to land on kind of the opposite side of him. And they do it for no reason whatsoever. Like, nobody's attacking them at that very moment. Like, they don't necessarily need to move. There is absolutely no reason to do it. And they do two times.
Yep. It's like, they're just like, let's do a family bonding gymnastics routine together.
It's really that.
I mean, good for them, I guess.
Spread eagles, backflips, flip-flops, one right after the other.
Exactly. So after they do that, Xena threatens Cortez that she'll kill him if he doesn't order his thugs to step down. And Cortez really doesn't want to die, so he breaks character. And the Roma-looking general is like, oh, so the king is Cortez? Such a surprise! Nobody told me!
Aww.
It's like very cardboard, but, like, I guess it works here.
Yeah, whatever.
It seems that the happy end is near, but Sulky Bro begins to whine again. Why didn't you let me kill Cortez? I didn't want to kill Cortez. And Xena just had enough of his whining at this point, so she takes Cortez down from the wall.
Ouch. So bad.
Puts the poor guy on his knees as if he hadn't suffered enough. She just, like, turns to Sulky Bro and says, like, you want it? Be my guest. But, of course, Sulky Bro is all talk and no action. And he's like, I can't. And he basically cannot hurt Cortez.
Mm.
That's the end of that. We guess Cortez got arrested or something.
Mm.
And some time passes, and then we see Xena and Sulky Bro. And Selkie Bro is like, yep, now I'm free. Gonna go home now. Bye. So it's like an immediate change of like, now I guess he doesn't want to kill Cortez since we...
He's cured.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that. Like the therapeutic breakthroughs worked. So that's it. That's the end. And to relieve all of us, but mainly myself, from misery, I'll tell you that we'll never see or hear anything about Xena's older brother again. Thank the gods. There are going to be episodes with family reunions. Like, there are going to be episodes where, like, they're seeing all of the people that are significant to them. But, like, I think at the end, the writers and the showrunners were like, let's just not mention this ever again.
Really?
Yep.
For some reason, like, in my head, he comes back. But you say that he doesn't. Let me double check.
Let's double check, because maybe it's just like I have, like, this guy is so infuriating to me that I have a selective memory and I just don't remember. But I do remember in the later episodes where there will be family reunions and we'll see Gabriel's sister and Xena's mother. But about this guy.
Yeah, no, you are correct. Only appears in one episode.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they just collectively decided, like, okay, we don't want to deal with that anymore.
Cool. And that marks the end of the episode. And we see the fun credits. They unfortunately come back to the standard style of the fun credits. It says... No messenger doves were harmed during the production of this motion picture. However, several are reportedly missing in action and search and rescue efforts are underway.
Oh, so basically they mean that, like, they lost a couple of pigeons.
They lost some doves, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the doves were so cute, I have to say.
They were.
Like, at some point there's a close-up and there's just, like, this little guy just, like, hanging out in someone's hands and kind of, like, softly cooing. And someone even, like, pets him a little bit.
Yeah.
It's so cute.
They are cute. Yeah, that's true.
So, what for you was the gayest moment of the episode?
I think there were a lot of cute, like, family moments with Gabriel and Xena. Not, like, intense moments of, like, confessing the love, but just, like, this thing that you kind of say to the person that you consider your longtime partner. I kind of liked this when Gabriel was apologizing that Sulky Bro had to witness the family fight. That was cute.
Yeah. For me, it's the smile on Gabrielle's face when Xena says that she has a way of getting in.
Oh, that was also nice.
Yeah. And how many chakrams out of 10 would you give this episode?
I was prepared to give it a low score, actually. But as we're talking now, I'm thinking, like, is it because the episode was bad or because... the episode gave me a lot of emotions, and I was infuriated with Selkie Bro, but that actually means that the episode was good. That's, like, the power of art. I would say, like, whether they meant to or not, they created a very memorable and well-rounded character that is very hateable. So, because of that, I would give it a 7.
Nice. I think I'll go 6. It's like a decent episode, but it's kind of like middle of the road for me. There are definitely lots that are worse, but there are also lots that are better. So
okay,
a 6 feels about right. And that only leaves us with the season 1 finale.
Yep.
That's going to be called "Is There a Doctor in the House?" And that's coming next. And while you're waiting for that, dear listener, feel free to follow us on our Instagram at Xena Made Me Gay. Always happy to hear from you in any shape or form.
Actually, I have a request. If you have any thoughts on, like, what should we do different while reviewing season 2, because maybe we could change up the format a little bit. Like, we're very curious. Could you please send us a message or write a comment? We'll be very happy to hear your ideas.
Oh yeah, for sure. Good idea. And until then, wishing you all the good stuff, and bye.
Bye.